Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi. Your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late-night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, I'm coming to you from my little studio beneath the stairs in Old Thornhill, just north of Toronto. What do you think of when you think of angels? For many, angels are flowing, winged, female-type creatures who enlighten, nurture, and guide people here on Earth. Some believe them to be spirit guides or benefactors, while others see them as mere protectors. Many people believe that they can be summoned or beckoned at the will of humans, while others don't believe in their existence at all. But the Bible describes angels very differently, indeed. Envision around you, day and night, a valiant, thriving battle between good and evil, raging within a shrouded jurisdiction. This army surrounds you each step you take, intervenes on your behalf, and wages spiritual warfare when the human soul is at stake. Angels are the servants of the Almighty God, His messengers, agents of His will, and silent guardians who keep watch when you think you are alone. In Encounters, co-authors Allie Anderson Henson and Donna Howell dispel many of the myths regarding these beings and reveal their true mission and purpose. Allie and Donna join me in the first half to share stories of angelic intervention as told to them by those who experienced it. They'll discuss how some of the misconceptions regarding these beings came to be, how the plight of Joan of Arc impacts our views of angels, and they'll answer lingering questions such as whether holy angels can default from God's army, whether they have wings or read our minds. We'll also discuss their fierce capacity, including their strength in warfare, their ability to fly, and how they manipulate earthly elements to carry out God's will. Coming up in the second half, I guess it's right up there next to politics and religion on the list of things you probably shouldn't talk about at the dinner table. Evolution versus creation. But yes, we're going there. Today, evolutionary theory is ubiquitous in our secular education systems. Neo-Darwinism is the dominant dogma throughout secular higher education and K-12 public education. Evolution is no longer just a biological theory. It permeates the natural sciences, social sciences, and philosophy. It's become a meta-theory. But Jeffrey K. Lyons, PhD, my guest in hours 3 and 4, argues that whenever scientific data are absent, both natural and social scientists resort to narrative as kind of a superglue. Evolution is open to criticism, he insists. He's here to attempt to poke holes in the theory of evolution. He'll explain why Darwin opposed the term evolution. He'll also discuss how many times Darwin actually referred to the Creator in the Origin of the Species. He'll reveal what world-famous scientist believed DNA was not naturally caused, and he'll discuss the three barriers to life that evolution cannot explain. He'll also offer proof that life cannot be the result of random forces, how catastrophic events wiped out about 90% of life on Earth, and who are some of the leading scientists and philosophers that dare to question evolution. Jeffrey K. Lyons coming up in hours 3 and 4. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Allie Anderson Henson oversees the research army of Skywatch TV and Defender Publishing. Her exploratory works have appeared in numerous books, documentaries, magazines, and television specials. Donna Howell is the best-selling author of The Handmaiden's Conspiracy, Radicals, Final Fire, Encounters, Afterlife, and Redeemed Unredeemable. She's also the current managing editor and writer-researcher for Defender Publishing and the co-host of Skywatch TV's Chalk Talk, She's appeared in numerous books, documentaries, magazines, and television specials. And together, Ali and Donna are co-authors of Encounters, Extraordinary Accounts of Angelic Intervention and What the Bible Actually Says About God's Messengers. Ali and Donna, welcome to Coast AM. How are you both?
Thank you for having me.
Hi there. It's good to be here.
Our pleasure. Thank you for hanging out with us for a couple of hours. I'd like to start with having you explain what we have probably, why we're probably wrong in our ideas about what angels are. Some of the more common misconceptions about angels that we might have. Why don't you start, Ali, and then I'll get Donna to weigh in.
Okay. Well, you know, the book Encounters was written, you know, in response to a crisis in the church. And so when we're talking about the misconceptions that have to do with angels, you know, there's a lot of myths that Hollywood actually propagates, and those are in the secular world. But then when we see what's happening in the church right now with the New Age invasion of the church and things like that, we see that a crisis is happening in the church where not only do people not know what angels are, but they misunderstand them so much that they end up elevating angels to a godlike status, and the byproduct is becoming that angel worship is becoming more common. So when we talk about myths, we can go anywhere from, you know, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings, to the idea that you could contact an angel through what's called an angel board, which is basically a white version, and I mean white in color. They look just like a Ouija board, but they're the color white, and they have pictures of the angel's wings. And we actually do have some Christians using tools like this to try to contact them and talk to them. And so, you know, it's a heavy subject. There's a lot to it. But when we're talking quickly about the kinds of myths that are just kind of everyday on the street, myths, you know, there's the idea that when you die, you become an angel. There's the idea that you can summon them, and you can call them kind of like a genie and ask them to do your bidding. You know, the idea that you would pray to your angel or petition your angel. There's a lot of ideas like this, but then, like I said, there's also a lot of ideas that are becoming a lot more, you know, nefarious in nature, where you have people who profess to be Bible-believing Christians, and yet they're dabbling in things like angel worship. And so we've gone from a place where the myths were harmless and they were kind of cute and they were in a lot of old black and white movies and things like that. This has escalated to a point where there are people making spiritual mistakes that could literally, you know, cause them to fall into a very dangerous trap of spiritual warfare. And so that's kind of, we tried to hit all the levels of all the myths. We tried to talk about all the really innocent ones, but then we did get into some heavier ones as well.
All right, so Donna, what are angels according to the Bible?
According to the Bible, there are a number of different members of the celestial order. That's what we call it. Dr. Michael Heiser, if you talk to him, he'll call it the heavenly host. We call it in our book the celestial order. It's kind of a parent term that covers all the beings that God has created that are non-human and all are part of the good guys, to put it simply. So, for instance, right at the top of the list, because we're talking about angels, I'll tell you that that is the Greek word angelos, and that specifically refers to messenger. That's what that word means, messenger. And so a lot of people, you know, they get that confused a little bit. I like to use a hunting dog analogy because people get that confused a lot of times with the seraphim and the cherubim, or a lot of times improperly pronounced in English as the seraphim and the cherubim. But these are words that describe multiple winged creatures that do have wings and are they are positioned in the throne room of God. So they're not sent to be a messenger in any way. Now in the Bible, whenever an angel does appear, when the word angel or messenger is used, it refers to something that appears more often than not as a regular man. Now, in Revelation, that does change quite a bit, and I know that over in Ezekiel and Isaiah, we do have some other interpretations that are that are not, they don't look like the anthropomorphic male human figure. But I would say that that is the majority of time that they appear in the Bible, they appear like a man. However, they don't appear just as a man. They appear as a fierce, something that is very terrifying. And we know that because the majority of the time that they appear in Scripture, the first words that they say is "fear not." So if they just look like a regular person, you know, then they wouldn't need to say "fear not." So what are they? They are messengers. They are to do God's bidding, not ours. We are not to misunderstand a lot of that, but I am getting a little bit ahead of myself that we will break a lot of those concepts down and discuss more what the word says about each individual area of that. But as far as where our misconceptions go from kind of the old world, we have completely maladapted a healthy understanding of what an angel should be based on kind of a triple threat here. We have the Byzantine iconoclasm and what that did to the Greco-Roman pantheon influence, you know, the gods and the goddesses of Greek and then later Rome. And then, believe it or not, a major shift that kind of happened around the time of the trial of the Joan of Arc, and we looked into that. And we looked into the very, very deepest recesses of where did we go wrong and why did it kind of happen around that time? And some of the stuff we discovered about Joan of Arc, it's quite amazing. But just to dispel straight out the gate, because I know a lot of people are going to be focused on the wings thing. So if you'll allow me, I have a hunting dog analogy here. A hunter goes into the woods to pursue game, to hunt. He takes with him three dogs. One is a pointer breed. It knows how to point at a bush. And the second is a flusher breed. It knows what angle to charge the bush to flush the game out, the right angle to, for the hunter to get a shot. And then the third is a retriever breed, and they have the expert soft mouth handling characteristic of that breed. All three of these breeds are equally canine in nature. Okay, you could say a parent term over them that they are all dogs. They all equally assist their master's will in accomplishing the act of a hunt. However, none of these animals look just like the other two. You wouldn't say their spots are the same or their bone structure is the same, and none of them carry out the exact same function as the other. So where they're all dogs, it's not accurate to say that they're all retrievers. So let's get the wings question out of the way and understand that whereas angels, seraphim, cherubim, and all of these other thrones and, you know, these things that are listed in Scripture as the members of the celestial order of God, it does not mean that they all have wings. In fact, angels are never appearing in the Word with wings, ever. So getting back to some of the things that Allie was saying, when you look at these like white Ouija boards and you start wondering, you know, well, my angel appeared to me and it said that it was the angel so-and-so and the wings were really beautiful, I wouldn't say that God would never allow a legitimate angel to appear with the kind of imagery that you might expect so that the Lord can use whatever tools he has to reach you. But what I would say is that wings and feathers and all of those things are actually quite theologically incompatible with what we know angels to be, and therefore I find them suspect. And therefore, I do find some of our recent church services that have been reported where feathers float down from the ceiling and stuff like that, I find a lot of that to be very concerning.
Okay, so they don't have wings, but do they even have a need to fly? Do they fly?
Well, we know from Daniel 9:21 that Gabriel flies. You know, there was a situation where Daniel was praying, and there was this 21-day delay, and Gabriel was caused to fly swiftly. It doesn't describe him as having wings, but it does say that he flies. And so we understand that they fly. We don't have a biblical description of them actually having wings.
All right, so you mentioned the seraphim and the cherubim. As you say, we often pronounce it as cherubim, but it's cherubim and seraphim. And you mentioned the thrones. That's kind of the highest order. But there's a middle order and a lowest order. Dominions, virtues, powers, principalities, archangels, and angels. Let's talk about the middle order just for a moment. What are the dominions, virtues, and powers? What are their responsibilities or their purpose?
The interesting thing when you're talking about, virtue, for example, there are some people who say that that's an attribute of Jesus, and others that believe that it's actually an entity that that carried some of Jesus's power. And so it depends on your interpretation. And I'll tell you something, the church, there's a lot of this thing that Donna and I call everybody knows theology. And it's kind of like where, I'm going to get off track for just a minute here, please forgive me. But for example, the phrase living creatures, people talk about the living creatures, but that phrase is not actually found in the King James Bible. Well, when we talk about those creatures, they're actually found in the throne room of God. It's the four beasts, if you're reading the KJV. Well, that becomes confusing, and yet everybody will talk about the living creatures as though everybody knows they're talking about the four beasts. So there's a lot of this interpretation that just kind of gets handed down, and people say, oh, there's an angel, that's virtue. And then other people will say, well, hold on, that's Jesus's power. And where that theology comes from is, the best example of it is when the woman went through the crowds, the woman with the issue of blood, and she pressed through the crowd, and she touched the hem of his garment, and he felt power leave him. So at that moment, that power that he felt leave him and healed her, a lot of people say that is virtue. So some people say, well, that's Jesus's power. And other people say, well, yeah, but that's an angelic entity that carries that power. And so actually, one thing we did do with this book to dispel some of this everybody knows theology, because it's frustrating when you hear these phrases thrown around, and yet it's hard to figure out where they're arriving at this. Where do they arrive at this idea?
Okay, I'm just trying to establish, is there a middle order? Is there a middle order of angels? Is there a lowest order of angels?
It depends on your interpretation.
Are there archangels? Okay, so tell me about archangels. Or are there principalities? Are there archangels?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there are archangels. And there are principalities. This is the spiritual warfare that takes place around us all the time in the unseen realm. It's waging war continually around us for our souls. The dominions, the entities that attach to specific regions and kind of oppress those specific areas. This is a type of spiritual warfare. Yeah, there's absolutely a hierarchy in the heavenly realms and in the dark realms. Absolutely.
And which order would be, if any, are responsible? I mean, is there an order of angels that is responsible for handling individual souls here on Earth? For example, do I have an angel? Do you have an angel? Or does it not work that way?
Well, again, there are a few different interpretations, but I will tell you that it's a very popular belief that everybody has a guardian angel. And so where this is taken from is Matthew 18, 1 through 9, and then Matthew 18, 10. So 18, 1 through 9 is spent defending children. And then Matthew 18, 10 says, "Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven." So based on this, a lot of people believe that every child has a guardian angel. But then, if you look at Hebrews 1:14, it says that they are all ministering spirits which are sent forth to minister for them who will be heirs of salvation. So some people say this is all Christians. Every Christian has a guardian angel. And then, that brings up a new question, which is, what about the people who have never made a decision for Christ, and yet their life is saved or changed somehow through angelic intervention? God knew ahead of time that they would make a decision for Christ and sent an angel. So then those people will say, well, what we believe is everybody who will ever make a decision for Christ in their lifetime has a guardian angel. And then there's another crowd of people that say, hey, every human being is eligible for salvation, so every single human being has a guardian angel. And so all of these, if you look into all of these arguments, they're all pretty well backed. But what I will say is all these technicalities.
Pardon my interruption. I'm just going to move into a break here. I hear that music percolating up. So we'll pick this up on the other side. Allie Anderson Hansen, Donna Howell. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. The International Space Station has been plagued by a small leak now for several months. You've probably heard about it. It was first detected back in September 2019, but not immediately addressed since there was no threat to the station or the astronauts on board. This week, cosmonauts finally tracked down the leak using a rather low-tech method. Get this, according to a report, the leak's location was pinpointed utilizing a teabag. The report didn't elaborate on how a teabag assisted the cosmonauts in finding the leak. However, you can read more, and there's some interesting photos and so forth up in the highlight carousel at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, Allie Anderson Hansen and Donna Howell will share angelic encounters right here on Coast to Coast AM. So Allie and Donna, before the break, we were talking about this idea that whether or not we each have individual guardian angels assigned to us. I just wanted either of you to sort of tie that up neatly before we move on to some actual angelic encounters. What further do we need to add to this idea of the possibility we may have personal guardian angels?
Well, it's certainly biblically sound to believe that the angels are taking care of us. Whether or not they're assigned to us one-on-one, Psalm 91:11 tells us he shall give his angels charge over thee. And the fact that angels are watching over us is throughout the Bible. So whether it's one-on-one all the time, every single person, some people debate that, but at the end of the day, if we ask God for help, he is going to send help to us.
And the idea that we can summon them, or that we can somehow discern knowledge about them, like perhaps their name, is there any biblical foundation for that?
There's really not, and I'll tell you why. First of all, if you read, there's a lot of passages in Psalm. I'll just rattle off a couple really quick. My help cometh from the Lord. That's 121, 1 and 2. Psalm 91 says, God is our refuge. He gives his angels charge over thee. And in 8, 3, and 4, it says, we are delivered when we call on him. There's no place in the Bible that tells us to call on angels for help. And on the flip side of that, we really only see three angels named in the Bible. There's the Archangel Michael, Gabriel is named, and Lucifer is named. Other than that, these angels are all referred to, for whatever reason God has chosen not to tell us the names, they're referred to without names. And so the idea that suddenly we would, be naming our angels and think that we would summon them, or we would try to, gain knowledge from them, and that we would talk to them on a first name basis, there's no real biblical foundation for that.
All right, I wanted to talk about some of the angelic encounters that are featured in the first chapter of the book, and one is an employee with the U.S. Postal Service named Jimmy Jones. Either of you, please tell us about Jimmy Jones' angelic encounter.
Okay, well, he was driving along. He's a UPS driver. He was trying to get his truck back safely because the storm was coming in, and he didn't make it, and the storm hit kind of in the middle of the road where he was, really. He crawled up to the underside, basically, of an overpass, and when he got up there, he saw a man, and it was strange because the man wasn't hanging on to anything, and, when Jimmy Jones talks about his story, he explains that he really had to hang on, and he felt this wind come through, and he hung on, and when he got done, the storm had passed. This man was still sitting nearby, and he went back down. It was kind of an incline to go back down. He went back down, and the people were looking for him because they thought that he had, been swept away by the wind. And he said, no, I'm just over here with this guy. And then he turned around, and the guy was gone, and he believed that that was an angelic encounter.
that was an angel that kept him safe during that storm. A lot, and there were other people that died during that storm.
And how else did he describe this angelic figure? Did he have any other details about his physical appearance?
Well, he noted that he was very calm, and he was just wrapped in a blanket sitting there. He didn't seem to really need to hang on to anything. He wasn't. My understanding is that he's fairly, just calm and sitting on his blanket.
And that calmness, I guess, allowed Jimmy, the U.S. Postal Service employee, to remain calm as well. That helped him survive the storm.
Yes, yes, because the stranger had a peaceful demeanor about him. He wasn't panicking.
All right. Talk to me about, I think his name is Brian Duvall. He's a drummer in a Christian rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was a kind of a lawn mowing accident where the lawnmower had turned over on him. And he called out, for Jesus not to leave him alone. What happened after that?
Well, he was, so he had mowed this lawn, and the house was empty where he was mowing. And so he drove... The way his ramp was on the back of his truck and the back of his mower did not have the roll bar. And so it was back heavy, and when he drove up on the ramps to load his zero turn mower, it rolled backward because of the weight in the back, and it kind of landed, basically it pinched him on the ground, and all of the weight of this mower was on his back, and his back was curved underneath. And immediately he said, Jesus, don't let me be alone. And he said he didn't see it directly, but out of his peripheral vision, there was a light figure, and he could hear it. It was very calm, just like what Jimmy Jones described. It was very calm, and this being said to him basically everything he needed to do next. He said, we need to call your wife. So he's trying to get his phone out. He can't get his phone out of his pocket because of the way he's pinched. And the being says to him, here's how you get your phone out. So he finally gets his phone out. He calls his wife. And he just, this being keeps telling him, we need to do this. We need to do this. And guides him through the steps of what to do next. He never could see it because of the way he was pinched. He couldn't turn his head and look at it, but it stayed beside him until the paramedics arrived. And he also noted that while he was in that position, the colors were just this brilliant, the sky was this brilliant color that he said there weren't even earthly words to describe. He couldn't explain this color. And there are other people who have explained the colors the same way. So that's an interesting, noteworthy side note about having an angelic experience. Apparently the colors are just... not what you see through human eyes on a typical time. The paramedics arrived and they did get him to the hospital. But that entity, that angel, stayed beside him until the paramedics were there.
What strikes me about that story is the angel didn't lift the lawnmower off this person who was trapped. Certainly would have had the strength to do that, I suppose. It's a very sort of non-interventionist kind of approach, don't you think?
It is. And as to why, I can't really explain that. You know what I mean? And I do believe that God works in mysterious ways, and I agree with you. I think that if God had told the angel to lift it, that just would have been the end of that, and for some reason God chose another path. But he sent an angel to comfort. And so... the interesting thing about angels is there are a list of things. They're ministering spirits, they're protectors, they're messengers, they're nurturers, they're warriors. And in this particular situation, this angel was a comforter and a nurturer. And that's the parameters of the role that it must have been sent
right.
to.
Are angels sent to test us? So, for example, someone, we're often told to be kind to the stranger at the door because that might be an angel. Does it work that way? Are they sent to test us to see if we will be charitable and kind?
I believe so. Hebrews 13:2 tells us that we may be entertaining angels unawares. And so what we learn from that is two things. Yes, what you said, be kind to people who need our help. You never know when one may be an angel, and this is one of the ways that God, you know, will test what kind of a person we are being to those around us. And the other thing is that we learn that they are absolutely capable of appearing looking just like a person.
Tom Horn, who's, the founder of Skywatch TV and Defender Publishing, and also a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM, I believe he's featured in the chapter of having had an angelic encounter. Can you tell me about Tom's experience?
Yeah, he was at a church, and this was when he was a fairly new pastor, and he was just having a regular service, and toward the end of the service, there was kind of a commotion in the parking lot. So he went out to see what had happened, why these people were kind of gathering around this particular car. And a young man gets out of the car. He says, "I'm going to kill you, preacher." And he literally starts going after him. He's trying to, you know, attack him. And for a little while, there were several, you know, deacons and, you know, the kind of strong part of the congregation, the stronger men in the congregation were trying to restrain this young man, who we later found out was demon possessed, and he kept leaping toward Tom, and these men couldn't restrain him, and he did a lot of things. Like, there was a medallion he had on his neck. He had pulled that off and stuck it in his mouth and tried to chew it up and swallow it, and you know, he wasn't in his right mind at all, and at one point in time, he lunged toward Tom, and something invisible caught him, stopped him in midair, and threw him backward. And it was an invisible force. The men that were trying previously to restrain him weren't even near him at that moment. And that happened. And then a little bit after that was when they were able to subdue him a little bit, and then they were praying over him. And they actually did cast the demon out of him, and the man actually gave his heart to the Lord. So that was a victory mm-hmm. on a lot of levels. But he hit an invisible wall and flew backward several feet right there in front of everybody. There were a lot of eyewitnesses to that account.
We often hear about the angel of death. Is there any biblical foundation for that? When it is our time, are we visited by an angel of death?
The thing that we know from the Bible is, and it's from the place of the story of Abraham's bosom. We understand that at that moment that he died, it is said that angels carried him to his final destination. The only other reference, to the angel of death is, of course, of the plagues of Egypt, when we see that, you know, that God delivered the plague mm-hmm. to the households that did not have the blood across the doorpost. Those are the destroying angels that we see in the Bible. But the idea of a grim reaper, you know, or a banshee coming to collect souls, we don't see a biblical foundation for that.
But the angel that comes at a time of death, as you say, to carry, I believe you mentioned Abraham, to carry Abraham off, what other role do they play? I'm trying to remember, from my catechism in Greek Orthodox, the Greek Orthodox religion, or the faith tradition, if you will, something about toll houses and how angels were kind of instrumental in guiding us through the various toll houses, on our way to, I guess, judgment and so forth. Do angels play any role there?
In the theology that I have studied, what I have always seen and read is that when a man dies, they will be taken, you know, to their final destination. And that the only intervention of angels that I've found in my theology is that they would be carried to their final destination. I haven't seen a situation in the studies that I've done where there would be toll houses and assistance of angels on that.
Angels seem to be very active in Revelation, in the New Testament. Talk to me about the role of angels in the book that's also known as the Apocalypse.
Well, yeah, in prophecy, angels become very active. One noteworthy thing that we see throughout the Bible is that about the time angelic activity becomes heightened, we know God's about to do something. We see, you know, there was negative. There was fallen angel activity in Genesis 6, and then we saw, you know, God pour wrath out. We see a lot of angelic activity around the birth and the announcement of the Messiah, you know, and then, of course, the Messiah came. And then we see, again, a heightened activity of angels in prophecy in Revelation. And so then in Revelation, they're very active. They pour out the bowls, and they have the trumpets. So in the inciting of judgment, there's a lot of angelic activity, but we also see a lot of interesting power. One of my favorite things that angels do in Revelation is in Revelation 14, we see that there are three angels that preach to every nation, every kindred, every tongue, every people, and they preach from a high place, and they preach in sequence. The three of them take turns, and basically, if I paraphrase their messages, the first one says, it's not too late, there's hope if you will repent. The second one says, the great city of Babylon has fallen, life as you know it is coming to an end. And then the third one basically says, I'm again paraphrasing, says, be warned, do not take the mark, do not worship the beast or his image. The interesting thing about this passage is that when it talks about them preaching in the midst of heaven, the Greek word used is mesura nema. And what this means in a literal translation is more literally a point in the sky in which it is as visible to all as the noonday sun. So it's interesting to me that these three angels will be in a place where they literally can be seen by the earth, and in sequence they're going to give these messages, you know, at the moment that all of this wrath is being poured out and everything, and they're still trying to get men to repent and trying to warn them about the very scary things that are coming and trying to tell them, you know, how to do the right thing. So angels, they are involved in passing out the judgment that will take place in Revelation, but they're also still trying to preach the gospel.
We're coming up on the top of the hour break here, so I just want to ask the question now, and then we'll continue to discuss after the break. And that has to do with spiritual warfare. So there are angelic interventions on our behalf, but I'm guessing there are also engaged in the spiritual warfare, the fallen angels, those that have, you know, gone against God's will, that are trying to tempt us and so forth. So I'm just wondering, is this battle going on, as I'm sitting here talking to you, is this battle going on all around me for my soul? Are the, let's call them the good angels or God's angels, are they constantly battling with the fallen angels for my soul as I'm sitting here?
And you're, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. You know, in Ephesians 6:12 tells us we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and, you know, darkness in this world and spiritual wickedness in high places. It's interesting that it lists those separately, too, because these are different realms of spiritual warfare. It's taking place around us all the time.
All right, we'll open up the phone calls, open up the phone lines at the bottom of the next hour, and we'll continue on the other side. More of my conversation with Ali Anderson Henson, Donna Howell, Encounters, Extraordinary Accounts of Angelic Intervention and What the Bible Actually Says About God's Messengers.